This is Two SoCal Gals. I'm Alicia Rodriguez. I heard that David Beckham has said he's donating the whole of his PSG salary to charity. Are you impressed?
I'm Josie Becker. Can MLS be the charity? I mean, a lot of pockets could use some cash things.
Yeah, no kidding. I know of at least one in Los Angeles that could really use some money right now.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. So this is Two SoCal Gals. This morning, we're going to discuss national team friendlies, World Cup qualifying. But first, Breck Shea is now with Stoke City as the transfer window has come to a close. What do you make of the move?
For me, obviously, if he gets playing time, I think it'll be great. You know, he doesn't necessarily have to slot right into the lineup like Jeff Cameron did, but you know, if he's stuck on the bench or never even gets on the bench, then, you know, that's obviously going to stunt his development and be an issue. But, you know, I think it just comes down to that. If he gets playing time, it'll be great. And if he doesn't, then it's not going to be so great. But what do you think?
You know, honestly, I'm not too optimistic about him getting playing time. You know, it's a 2.5 million pound deal, as reported by the BBC. It's less than the Galaxy paid for Robbie Keane. And you're talking about an MLS squad versus a Premier League squad. So I think he's someone that they see as a bit of a project, you know, a lot of raw talent. And if it works out down the line, then it's great for Stoke. But he's not someone they're bringing in to make an impact right away. You know, he hasn't played in a while. He's coming off of surgery. I just don't think that we'll see him playing right away, which just makes me fear that he could get buried as the plan changes, as it will, you know, week by week. But what about back in MLS? Do you think FC Dallas are going to really miss Shea?
That's a good question, because if he's playing at his best, then yes, of course they're going to miss him. If he's playing at a 2012, you know, version of himself, then not really, because he didn't play well at all last year. And, you know, obviously he was hurt, and obviously he had some problems with his coach. You know, and then there was the pretty well-publicized hangover after failing to qualify for the Olympics. But yeah, I mean, I guess it would depend on sort of what, you know, if he's able to bounce back or not. But on the surface, I mean, certainly you have to say that Dallas is a weaker team on paper, and they've obviously lost their sort of, you know, marketable star. And I think that it's going to be a little bit tougher for them to kind of be a draw in the league this season. Because I know, you know, when I saw him in 2011 in person, I mean, he was by far the most electrifying player I saw that season. You know, and again, 2012 was hard for him, but yeah, I think Dallas is going to miss him. But what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think that he's was a star of the future. And I bought into the arguments that were being put around that, oh, MLS blocked the deal because they stand behind their young stars and they saw Shea as really marketable and all that. And, you know, I bought it. It turned out just to be marketing tactics to drive his price up. But, you know, they are losing some of their star power, and, you know, they're going to be off from where they were a couple of years ago. And, you know, I hate to think that their window was that one MLS Cup, but, you know, a lot of that core is just kaput.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be interesting to see what they can accomplish this season. Moving on, we had a couple of national team friendlies this week that will probably be of interest to listeners. First, the U.S. and Canada played to a thrilling 0-0 draw. Is the concern surrounding the game for the U.S. warranted, or do you think this has been blown out of proportion?
You know, Jurgen Klinsmann really sold this camp, this January camp, as being a preparation camp and not a scrub camp, for lack of a better word. Which is different from how other January camps have gone. So I feel like this game started to take on some importance because there was this assumption that, maybe six or seven guys from this squad are going to end up on the qualifying squad. Because Klinsmann hasn't had time to work with people over in Europe, and Landon Donovan is off on sabbatical somewhere. So, on the one hand, yes, the wailing and gnashing of teeth is warranted, but I think it just the match got overhyped, and we all bought into what Klinsmann was saying, and there's much more to it than that. But what do you think?
Well, my standard position as far as the U.S. national team goes is I think every result is blown out of proportion, either positively or negatively. I think it's just an outgrowth of the passion of the fans that, they want to see the team succeed so badly, and so, when they fail to live up to expectations, it's seen as the end of the world, and when they do well, it's seen as, a sign of the future, and, this is it, you guys, and so that, I think kind of clouds the judgment a little bit, but I'm along the same lines as you. I think it was overall a bad showing from, a bunch of guys who are looking to impress Klinsmann, enough in to warrant more minutes in competitive games, and for the most part that didn't look to be the case. And let's not forget either that although Canada had a good year last year, this was a very young team for them and basically an experimental squad. So that does kind of make the result a little worse, I think, in the eyes of the United States. But yeah, obviously it was hard to watch and probably not one, for the memory banks, but it was a game and we'll see what happens in the next one.
It was disappointing to see Eddie Johnson looking fairly pedestrian. Chris Wondolowski was even there. I honestly, have no idea. The Castrol Index for this match, three defenders were at the top, and it is very difficult for defenders to be at the top of any soccer metric because the biggest things you can do are score goals and get assists, which defenders don't do a whole lot. So, yeah, at least Omar Gonzalez played well. That's all I got. So, better attended was the Mexico friendly down in Arizona. Did you find anything that you took away from this 1-1 draw?
In a lot of respects, it was pretty similar to the US game, except for obviously there were two goals scored, although both goals were penalties. Goals are goals, but nothing came in the run of play in the match. The Denmark squad was decent. It wasn't, their top squad, but obviously Mexico's, it was an all domestic based squad for Mexico. So obviously that, means it wasn't the top team. But Chepo de la Torre, the coach of Mexico, he gave some more of the guys who won the gold medal at the Olympics their first run out with the senior team. So he's getting some of those guys minutes, and I think as opposed to maybe the perception of the US team, where we're trying to find guys to slot into the rotation and slot into the real key core first team group. For Mexico right now, what they're doing is expanding the player pool and seeing, which guys they can draw upon when they need to, and really stocking the depth. So as far as that goes, obviously the prospects look a lot brighter for them. But I will say, as far as the game was concerned, it was really pretty boring too, and it was hard to watch. So I don't know if it's this time of year or just a bad week or what it was.
Well, I'm gonna go ahead and admit to not having watched this one, and we'll get to what I do want to talk about with this friendly in a second. But just to sort of note, I think it was like 40,000 that showed up for this friendly, which was held in the U.S. in Arizona, and it was like 11,000 that showed up for the U.S. friendly. And everyone's gonna try and spin that and make a big deal of that. To which I say, it's always been that way. I don't know what reality you have lived in where, like, it's 50-50 US and Mexico fans in this country, but no. Mexico outdraws the US and America all the time. It happens.
I mean, it doesn't really bother me at all, but obviously there are a lot of people who it gets on their nerves. And one other thing that's probably going to get on their nerves, although not necessarily mine, is that the Mexican Friendly on Wednesday was broadcast in English on ESPN. And it was the first of a long-term partnership that's supposed to run, I think, through the World Cup. Do you think this will have an impact on soccer fandom in the United States?
No. And I'll try and stretch that out a little further. I mean, just following this logic, then Fox Soccer has been MLS's worst enemy by making EPL matches widely available. And clearly, that's not the case. Clearly, any exposure to soccer is a good thing. And the kids playing NYSL, they're not dumb. They know what good soccer looks like, and they know who the best players in the world are. You can't pretend like Messi isn't doing his thing over in La Liga. It's happening, and it's not taking away fans. It's just getting more people exposed to soccer. I don't think we're going to see Mexican Americans all of a sudden, oh, it's in English. Well, now I have to root for Mexico. Like, that, I don't get it, but maybe, what are you thinking?
You know, I was approaching it from a different angle, and you know, what I was figuring, as far as the actual numbers, I'm not necessarily sure how significant the bump will be, but I do think that there will be non-Spanish speaking fans of soccer in general, and ones who are, you know, willing to watch the Mexican national team. They know that they're a decent team, but they don't know much about them, who are frankly afraid to watch in Spanish. And you know, I think a lot of hardcore soccer fans obviously have to put up with watching the sport in languages that they may not be familiar with. But there are, you know, there are those who basically refuse to watch a sport if they can't, you know, listen, understand the commentary along the way. And I think that this may be a way for them to get some exposure to the game, to the national team, I mean. And you know, maybe I don't know if it'll be a gateway necessarily to the Mexican League and that sort of thing, but I think it'll kind of open some perceptions about the Mexican national team, get people more familiar with them, you know, and maybe perhaps you know, be an entree into branching out even further.
Yeah, you know, it's. I don't want to say know your enemy because I'm supposed to be like impartial or whatever. But, you know, any way of getting to see what other people in the region are doing in soccer is only positive. You know, US is going to be facing Mexico over and over and over again. You're going to need to get used to them, see what they do, see how they play, you know, and learn.
Yeah, I mean, I think the know your enemy angle makes a lot of sense, and I will also say that I think the crew that they got for the game was very good. Fernando Palomo had the call, and then Alejandro Moreno was the color commentator. I think they both did an excellent job. My only critique, and on the grand scheme of things, it was relatively minor, was that they were definitely, you know, favoring the coverage of Mexico over Denmark. And while I don't necessarily expect them to be 50-50 on it, they had a few occasions where they were saying things like Marco Fabian de la Mora with the, you know, sweet pass, and then they would say, "Oh, and the Danish defender runs him over." And it's like, you can't say the guy's name, like, come on. But you know, otherwise I thought the coverage was excellent. I really thought that they did a good job.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got Jared Dubois from the Best American Soccer Show. A lot of fun stuff, so stick around. Okay, and we're back. We've got Jared Dubois from the Best American Soccer Show. We're going to be talking a little bit U.S. friendly and looking forward to the qualifier coming up. First, just is there anything that we can take away from the nil-nil draw?
Oh, I would think more than anything, when you're looking at that Canada game, it's hard not to make it about the game itself because the result was so poor. The whole point of that game and that whole point of that camp was for individual player analysis. So when you look at that and you boil it down just to a player level, you kind of learn one of two things coming out of it. Either A, you learn guys that just probably aren't going to be able to cut it. And then B, you might find a couple guys that can. And I think in this game, you saw a lot more of the former than you saw the latter. When you think about the people that did impress, unfortunately, it's at some positions that you maybe don't need. And that's probably the person that impresses most is Kyle Beckerman. And the unfortunate thing for Kyle Beckerman is that he's got a lot of a logjam right there in front of him. When you think of Danny Williams, Michael Bradley, and even Jermaine Jones playing similar positional styles to him. But Kyle Beckerman showed you exactly what you see at RSL all season long. Good on the ball, patient, good distributor, and a leader on the field. And those are things that'll get him to Brazil. I'm almost positive that those things will get Kyle Beckerman to Brazil. But the thing is, you need players that can play wide. You need guys that can play center back. You need guys up top. At center back, Omar Gonzalez, he did pretty well. He wasn't tested much, though, so it's kind of hard to take much out of it. What you can say, though, is that he has a good position on set pieces, which is a thing that the U.S. is going to need, especially if Carlos Bocanegra can't continue to play that role. And then he also didn't mess up at all the few times he was called upon. So Omar Gonzalez is in a great position to finalize a position with this senior national team. Outside of that, I think Benny Failhaber had a good game. And Josh Gatt, while he didn't have a good game, showed flashes of things that the U.S. needs, and that's speed and aggression.
But with only 6 days to the qualifier, are U.S. fans right to be a little nervous?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it shouldn't just be that this game that makes you nervous. It should be the way the U.S. Struggled down the stretch in the first round of qualifying. Outside of that, they should be nervous because you have players like Carlos Bocanegra, Steve Cherundolo, Fabian Johnson, guys that you're going to need. I mean, you need a good starting defense when you're playing away two of your first three games in the hex. And with that many questions around those guys that have been stalwarts of the U.S. defense, you should be nervous. And combine that with the frustrating lack of offense over the entire first round of qualifying, those are some really nervous times, I think, for most U.S. national team fans. So, yeah, they have every right to be nervous. But if Jozy Altidore can find a way to translate that club form, and I really think it's only going to take one goal, if he can get a goal early or sometime in this first Honduras game, I think he can blow it out for the Hex. This is a guy that's just been a big snake bit. If he can get off the schneid, I think this guy could just blow up. He's got great confidence right now coming out of the Eredivisie.
Yeah, you touched on it a little bit, Jared, but I was wondering if you could, maybe in addition to talking about some of the players who played well, if you could talk about a player whose stock fell, in your opinion, on Tuesday.
Well, unfortunately, I think someone like Brad Evans, whose stock wasn't that high to begin with, I think kind of cemented what I already knew. Brad Evans is a guy who he's a man, just like in MLS, he's a man without a position. What is he the best at? He's not necessarily the best at any one position. He's a guy that can kind of be sufficient at a number of different spots. So I think he fell. Unfortunately, the three guys that everyone had questions of, Mark, going into that starting lineup, Brad Evans, Brad Davis, Chris Wondolowski, all fell. And when it comes to Chris Wondolowski, it really is starting to be the nail in the coffin. It has to be. The U.S. has to move on. I want Chris Wondolowski to succeed. I really do. He's such a feel-good story. But getting to the World Cup's not about feel-good stories. It's about guys that can put the ball in the back of the net. So I think all three of those guys, combined with age as well, when you think about Brad Davis and Chris Wondolowski, this was their put-up-or-shut-up game, a game where they needed to be able to take their personality, show what it is on the field, and they failed to do so. It was really vanilla in that first half. Someone else whose stock may have come down a bit, I wasn't really happy with either fullback, Tony Beltran and Justin Morrow. But then again, like I said, when it comes to Brad Evans, their stock wasn't that high to begin with. So I think that there's a few guys that fell. Chris Wondolowski and Brad Davis are probably the biggest names out of those group, though.
So looks like Omar Gonzalez is probably a solid for getting called up for the qualifier. AJ De La Garza doesn't dress, but is there still possible room for him on the national team with a pretty impacted year?
I think if AJ had a chance, he would have been in that game, to be honest with you, in Houston. And I'm a big fan of AJ. I've been on the record on my show and a number of other shows saying that I think AJ De La Garza is positionally probably the best defender in MLS. But unfortunately, position only takes you so far. Look how much Michael Parker's had to struggle to get back in this team. He had to prove it overseas and consistently. Because I find that they're very two complementary players. They pick Michael Parker and AJ De La Garza when it comes to skill set and physical handicaps, to be honest with you, in terms of size. Michael Parker's is just now getting back there. And it's there as a right back, not as a center back, which MLS fans know him for. So AJ De La Garza, if he has a future at the national team level, I think it's going to be at fullback, which is unfortunate because I think he's a really smart positional defender. And if he makes it to the national team, I also hate to say this, it's probably on the coattails of Omar Gonzalez. I mean, how far can he ride that he's the best wingman out there for Omar Gonzalez? Is Jurgen Klinsmann really going to take that chance at the highest level when he has someone like Jeff Cameron? I mean, there's no reason to displace Cameron. He's done nothing to lose that spot. If anything, he's solidified it even more. I'll go so far as to say Omar Gonzalez may even start this game against in Honduras, because can you trust Bocanegra, who's just come back from injury? Can you trust Bocanegra, who looked so poor the last round of qualifying? I don't think you can. I think you take the shot, you take the chance, and you put a guy like Omar Gonzalez, who's MLS Cup MVP, and last year was the Defender of the Year in MLS, and you just trust what you've seen about him over a year and a half, and you throw him in there.
We'll finish up with this. Obviously, Honduras seems to be a team on the rise, and you know, coupled with the fact that the U.S. didn't play particularly well this week in the friendly. What's your prediction for next week's qualifier?
I think the U.S. is lucky to get out with a 1-1 draw. there's a big part of me that wants to predict a loss here. But I'm going to say it's hard because it's been so long since you've seen the senior tape players. You start to forget a bit. And the game against Canada is so palatable and recent that it almost sours what you think about the national team. Even though those guys are going to be playing next Wednesday have nothing to do with that game you saw over the weekend. I mean, there's maybe two starters on that team. You have Graham Zuzzi and Eddie Johnson are probably the only people that are going to start. Maybe Omar Gonzalez. But there's still such a negative connotation to that game that it kind of sours me when I think about the Honduras game. But when I really sit down and think about it, I think guys like Michael Bradley, Danny Williams, Clint Dempsey, they have a solid enough core in midfield that they can slow the game down. And I think they can steal a goal on the road and probably get out with a 1-1 draw.
All right, Jared, thanks so much for taking some time out of your busy schedule. And we love having you on the show.
Late.
All right.
See ya.
Hi, thank you.
No problem.
Welcome back, and it's time for toss-up. First toss-up, what's more likely, a Beckham goal for PSG or a Mario Balotelli assist for AC Milan?
Okay, I had an answer picked out, but I have a feeling it's a trick question. But I'm just going to go with my first answer. I'm going to say a Mario Balotelli assist for Milan. I just think he's going to get more playing time than Beckham right off the bat. And Milan could really use some attacking power. So I'm going to say Balotelli assists, but you'll probably tell me he never makes assists or something. What do you think?
I have this giant grin on my face right now. Yeah, Mario Balotelli with Manchester City, one assist the entire time he was there. Now, granted, it was the goal that won Manchester City the premiership. So, you know, good time to decide to assist someone else in scoring. But he doesn't care about other people on the pitch ever. That's not the way he plays. So I'm personally going to go with the Beckham goal. I don't think he's going to get that much playing time. I think he'll mostly come off the bench. But if he's coming off the bench, all it takes is that one set piece, and he can still bend it, and it goes whoo right in the back of the net. So, yeah, back on goal.
Well played on the trick question, well played. all right, so next one. What happens first? Toronto FC gets a win. I'm assuming we're talking about a competitive win, right?
Yes.
A competitive win, or Landon Donovan starts an MLS match?
Okay, so I'm going to go with Landon Donovan starting an MLS match. I think because we don't have details yet, a lot of folk are sort of jumping to the, oh, well, we can't really believe Bruce Arena. Landon Donovan might not be back until the summer. Who knows? He's off on walkabout. But I honestly feel like he's going to be back in the preseason. He's going to get his workouts. He'll be back for the first match of the season. And Toronto FC were historically bad last year, and they probably will be again. I don't expect them to win in the month of March when MLS begins. But what about
Well,
you?
for me, hope springs eternal, and I'm gonna make the wager that Donovan doesn't come back right away, so that'll give TFC time to win, and so I'm gonna go with Toronto to break my heart once again.
Wow. All right. So next up, Shalree Joseph. He's still technically on Chivas USA, even though he has been told he's a persona non grata. Should Chivas keep him or sell him?
If you read any of my writings about him in the last few months, I definitely think they should sell him, get rid of him however they can. I know he's a veteran of the league and he has a very distinguished resume, but he was a disaster for Chivas last season. And although I don't think their coach Chelis did a very good job in just spilling the beans about what they were planning on doing with him, I don't think that he really has a role in this team next season or this season.
Yeah, we've already seen Chivas doing a little house cleaning. I think they absolutely should sell him. I won't go Simon Borg and say that they have the best plan ever, or I don't even think they really are sticking to a plan, but I think for Chivas, getting younger is the best thing they can possibly do, and keeping around veterans and is not the way to get younger, so sell them.
Yeah, if you like youth policy, they're doing one, so we'll see how it turns out. Last one for the week. Which one is the better leaked second shirt, Chivas USA or the Seattle Sounders?
All right, I'm a total kit nerd, and the Chivas kit is getting a lot of love. It's getting a lot of love right now, but I gotta go with the Sounders. They're both black kits, but the Sounders got this nice, what is that, vertical? Yeah, vertical stripe going up the left side, like green, got some dots going on. It's nice. I can't stand solid color kits for a league that's trying to be kind of hip and edgy and progressive. But what do you think?
Yeah, so the Chivas USA one, it turns out, is most likely going to be blue instead of black. So that kind of throws a wrench into the edginess of it. But although I do like it, and obviously I have affiliations with the team and all, I also like the Sounders League shirt because I also like the off-center vertical stripe. Club Tijuana has introduced one of their own this season to their jerseys, and I think it looks great. I think it's the new thing and it'll get old soon, but it's new for now, and it also cuts down on the garishness of the Sounders jerseys by keeping the brightness to a relative minimum. So yeah, I like it. If that's their shirt, then I'm cool with that.
Yeah, it's like a highlighter. You know,
Yeah.
you don't wear a highlighter. You highlight things with the highlighter. But I will say, the one that we've seen for Chivas has got the LA crest on the back, and it kind of makes mention of the like Angelinos, like the LA flock. And you know, I thought that was just a really cool nod to where they play. You know, since they're wearing the city of Guadalajara's crest on the front.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's long overdue, and I hope to see that on the real thing.
All right. Well, that is our show for today. We thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to stick around. We've got some big things planned for this next season. I'll borrow from MLS's playbook and say we have a major announcement coming up in the next few weeks.
there's going to be some uniting happening, I feel like.
Uniting. I feel like some women are getting together, something like that.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll see you next time.
Thanks, everybody.